Phil Mackey, Judd Zulgad.
I think it's false advertising, and the FCC should do something about it.
Mackey and Judd on 1500 ESPN.
Football, gentlemen.
We got more football.
And here's what we're going to do on this edition of Vikings Prop Bets, all right?
Okay.
We're going to scout Vikings opponents on this edition of Vikings Prop Bets.
Interesting.
All right.
So we've done a full season's worth of mostly Viking-centric things and, you know, quarterback stuff. Let's turn our attention toward the teams the Vikings may be looking at down the stretch in both conferences.
I was going to say, known opponents or possible opponents?
Possible opponents.
Ooh.
Possible opponents. Well, one is a known opponent, the obvious. We'll start with that one. All right? Mm-hmm. What will the Packers' final record be at the end of the regular season? They are 7-6 right now. They go at Carolina, home against the Vikings, and then at Detroit to end their season. What will the Packers' final record be?
Dave, you want to start us off?
I can do that. At Carolina, home Vikings, and at Detroit. Boy, this is interesting.
It's
this
juicy.
Is a question.
It's juicy.
For what's best for our show, 7-10.
Wow.
Or excuse me, not 7-10, 7-9.
7-10.
Yes, they're going to play one extra. 7-9. They are going to lose them all. Aaron Rodgers may play this weekend. They will lose in Carolina, and they will shelve him the rest of the way, meaning the Vikings and Lions walk over.
And then we get to play Vikings Packer event line for the next 3 months.
And that's what I'm all about.
Yep. It's going to be glorious. So Dave says they run the table losing out.
Yeah, I don't.
6-12.
I will
3-7.
I will say that my Benilde St. Margaret's math tells me that they are going to win one of these games and lose two, so they will finish 8-8. They will finish at 500.
Okay.
I could see them winning. You know what? I think Detroit's a sneaky mess. I think Detroit's a sneaky mess. I think my guy Jim Caldwell has rebounded with a really bad year coaching-wise, and I don't think that team's in great shape. So I could see them easily losing to Carolina. I could see them losing to the Vikings at Lambeau and then pulling out that last game. So I'm going to give them a 500 season, a non-playoff year, 8-8.
Detroit is not a sneaky mess. I've done some research on that to complete the answer to this question. I'm going to say 9-7. I think the Packers lose to the Vikings, but they win the other two, and that game against Detroit might matter. It depends on what Seattle does and some of the other teams, but that Detroit game is not going to be a gimme at all. I think you look at the schedule and say, Detroit by week 17. Detroit's losses this year are not offensive. They've come to Atlanta, Carolina, New Orleans, Pittsburgh, Minnesota, and Baltimore. Maybe five playoff teams that they've lost to this year. So Detroit is slotted right in there as a league average team. They're just not quite good enough to beat playoff teams.
Going to be enough to cost Jim his job, I guess.
Yeah, and it probably will be. And they're going to miss the playoffs. But they're good enough to beat Tampa and Chicago and Green Bay without Aaron Rodgers and all those teams. They beat Minnesota once the season in Minnesota. But Detroit's schedule is home against Chicago. That's a win to get to 8-6, you'd
mm-hmm.
think.
Mm-hmm.
At Cincinnati.
Well, you'd hope that's a win.
I mean, and then are they 9-6 going into that final game against the Packers, which they might have a chance to make the playoffs? That's such a weak schedule for Detroit. But I'm going to say 9-7. Packers beat Carolina to get to 8-6. And then the Vikings basically put them to bed. But then the Packers maybe wind up ruining Detroit's chances at the end of the year. To maybe even with Brett Hundley, if the Packers are out, if they just sit Aaron Rodgers. So 9-7. All right, let's do this one. The Eagles right now are in first place in the NFC, and the Vikings need them to lose a couple of games. If the Vikings win out and the Eagles lose two, the Vikings can get home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagles without Carson Wentz, how will they fare in their final three games? At the New York Giants, home against the Oakland Raiders on Christmas, and then home against the Dallas Cowboys on a short week to end the season.
You know what? 3-0.
All right.
3-0. This team without Wentz is not great, but I think they're still solid. I think they're still good. The Giants are just a dumpster fire, and I know that they're that's a division game, but they're still a dumpster fire. They're a complete mess. Oakland's going to have to travel across the country. I think Oakland might fire Del Rio. They're no great shakes. Definitely can beat them because you said that's at home. And the Cowboys have had a weird year. That might be a tough one, but I'm going to side with the Eagles in that game as well. I'm going to say they win all three of them.
No, they go 2-1. They do win the first two, though, and they have it all sewn up, and that's why they lose Week 17 to the Cowboys. You're resting, guys. You're not taking it seriously.
Fair enough.
Because you don't need to.
I think they're ready to lose two of those three if it wasn't the Giants and the Raiders the next 2 weeks. Like, if it was at Dallas with Zeke coming back or something in Week 16,
yeah,
and Zeke will be back for that Week 17 game, and if Dallas wins a couple games, then they're still fighting for a playoff spot. But I'll say 2-1, and the Vikings then have to fear maybe going on the road if they get to the NFC Championship game if both teams do.
Cold weather, bad field, Kai Forbath trying to kick a field goal.
Which leads me to this prop bet question. In order in the NFC, which three teams should the Vikings fear the most? Which three teams should the Vikings fear the most in the NFC right now? In order. I'll start. I'll give you guys a second here.
Okay.
I think it's New Orleans, Seattle, and Philadelphia. Philadelphia would have been number one on that list with Carson Wentz, especially if you're going to Philadelphia. But I'm going to say New Orleans because that's an actual defense now.
Mm-hmm.
They're really hard to defend at the skill positions if Kamara's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And Drew Brees is one of the five or six greatest quarterbacks of all time. It seems like they're traveling a lot better now than previous Saints teams do. And Seattle, just because of Russell Wilson. And even though that team is in shambles, it's Russell Wilson, and he's ridiculous. And even if you put pressure on him, he can escape and make plays and make things happen. And Philadelphia, mostly because you'd have to go to Philadelphia to win that game. And the rest of the team is solid. So New Orleans, Seattle, and Philadelphia.
Seattle is the number three. I think that's for sure, just because I don't trust their offensive line, the defense. They're missing too many guys. I think that's not a worry so much unless Russell Wilson goes nuts. I still think Philly's the number one worry, and that's probably just because of home field. I think that's the one thing. You've obviously already beaten the Saints. They're a different team now. They're playing very well. They could certainly do some things, but I think just based on the fact that you'd have to go to Philly, they are the number one concern.
3-2-1, Philadelphia 3,
ooh.
Rams 2, they've seen you. He's a really good offensive mind.
True.
He is a very good coach. Saints 1. You got Drew Brees. Everybody else is trying. You know, you got Philly now, backup quarterback. Jared Goff I like, but I have no idea, right? You got Drew Brees, won a Super Bowl. I would say, and the Saints have finally decided, rightfully so, that they need to take defense seriously. So 3 Philly, Rams 2, Saints 1.
All right. And then final question. If you were to get there, Vikings and Patriots, if they played 10 times or 100 times right now or this season, assuming Gronk is there, what percentage of the time do the Vikings beat the Patriots? Or however you want to answer it, how many times out of 10 do the Vikings beat the Patriots head up? And it would be at US Bank Stadium. So
yeah, if they play the Patriots and Tom Brady head up, and they play, most importantly, Belichick, I say they beat them 4 out of 10 times.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Oh, there's a definite chance. Oh,
there's a chance.
There is a definite chance. There's a definite chance. And there is a chance, there's a very good chance that with this defense in place and the personnel and the scheme, that you could slow them and disrupt Brady. All of that being said, Belichick is so good and so effective that I would say it's only 4 out of 10. It's not more than that, despite the fact that that game, as you just said, would be at home.
I think the only question is how many times does Zimmer out-scheme Belichick as far as getting to the quarterback? I think he can do that half the time.
If you hit
Brady, he's not nearly the same quarterback. He's proven that for many years. Mm-hmm. If you get to him and you knock him around, he's far less effective. So I'd say 5 out of 5 or 5 out of 10.
I'm in lockstep with David. I think it's a coin flip. And if the Giants were able to do it a couple times, Tom Coughlin and that front four that the Giants had 2007, 2011, and the formula was make Tom Brady uncomfortable, get him moving around,
mm-hmm.
and he's far older and less mobile than he was in 2007. So Mike Zimmer can do the same thing.
Five times out of 10. Here's why I don't go to 5.
Because you're negative.
Belichick, well, that's partially it.
Yeah.
Belichick and the Patriots freak teams out. It's just weird. They are... New England has a lot of games won by Wednesday, because teams absolutely outthink themselves and get uptight.
I don't think Mike Zimmer falls into that trap.
I don't know. That's a very good question.
It's possible that players could fall into that trap. Yes. I don't think Mike Zimmer would fall into
that trap. I'm just saying, I give Belichick the extra game based on the fact that I have never seen a team in that league freak teams out as much as the Patriots do. It's just a bizarre deal.
I don't think the Vikings defensive players would get freaked out either.
And you might be right.
They've played enough against Aaron Rodgers and other great quarterbacks in the NFC. I mean,
I said 4 out of 10.
Everson Griffin ain't going to sit there saying, Tom Brady, man, he can throw the ball over the yard. No, he's going to go hit him.
Yeah, they've played Breeze this season alone. Rodgers, Breeze, Roethlisberger, Ryan, Cam. Like, they've faced all the big MVPs.
I'm very close to you. I'm very close to you guys.
Trubisky.
I'm being
Kaiser.
I said 40%. It's really good.
I love you splitting hairs on the 4 or 5 out of 10.
Well, you asked me the question. I take this segment very seriously.
No, but then you circled back on why exactly it wasn't 5 instead of 4.
Well, right, but it's 40%. That's still really good.
Doogie's going to come in here next. Let's get into some Twins hot stove. The Twins did make an interesting signing of a pitcher that you've absolutely heard of. It's not one of those, random. It's kind of a bargain bin, but it's an interesting signing. When we come back, we'll get to that. And what else are the Twins considering here in the last couple days at the winter meetings? Mackey and Judd.
Mackey and Judd now continue.
Come on.
On 1500 ESPN.
All right, it's our weekly scoop segment with Darren Doogie Wolfson, 5 Eyewitness News and host of the Scoop Podcast, which you can find pretty much anywhere you would download podcasts. 1500ESPN.com is a good place to find it. iTunes, KSTP.com. The hot stove is cranked up, Dukes. The Twins have landed Michael Pineda, who has had Tommy John surgery and will not pitch in 2018. But it's an interesting signing because it's $10 million over 2 years, the Twins announced. So they're targeting a comeback season in 2019 for Pineda for not much money.
Good morning, by the way, gentlemen. Happy hump day. I wouldn't necessarily dismiss the possibility of the Twins being in some sort of playoff race and Pineda potentially pitching come September.
Okay.
Now, yes, is this move much more about 2019 than 2018? Absolutely. It also tells you that the Twins feel like not only is the window open now, but that window extends beyond 2018. Maybe more realistically, the window is more open 2019 and 2020. If you consider the distance between them and the Astros, the Indians, the Yankees, the Red Sox, you can make a case they are much closer to the 5 or 6 teams that were chasing them for that second wild card. And, oh, by the way, some of those teams are getting better. Ohtani to the Angels. You know, the Mariners are trying to do some stuff. The Rangers are doing some stuff. You know, so maybe they look at it and say, you know what? Hopefully we can be competitive in 2018, but maybe more realistically, let's really make a run in 2019 and 2020. Michael Pineda has swing and miss stuff. I went back and forth with Twins VP Mike Radcliffe this morning. He told me, hey, the guy induces swings and misses.
Yes, they lack that.
This is a good roll of the dice. There's not a lot of risk involved in a 2-year, $10 million deal. So I like it. They were also in on Drew Smyly, who chose the Cubs instead of them. Same situation. Tommy John. So the Twins had it in their minds, whether it was Smyly, Pineda, they were getting a guy that mostly had to spend 2018 rehabbing with an eye on 2019. Yeah, they were in on Smyly until the very end, I'm told.
So what's next, Dukes? What's their next move?
It depends. I mean, they're not really in on any of these relievers. They told Brian Shaw's agent, hey, we like him, but not at $9 million a year, not at 3 years. I mean, they're looking at a reliever on a 2-year deal, maybe a 1-year deal. I just saw the Jim Bowden note that Juan Nicasio is close to a deal with the Mariners. I'm told the Twins are not making any sort of push on him. On Pat Neshek, he goes to the Phillies. The Twins had a conversation at the GM meetings on Neshek, had a follow-up call. The Twins had zero dialogue with Neshek's agent going all the way back to Thanksgiving. I thought he made some sense, but the Twins had just about no interest.
Mm-hmm.
In Pat Neshek. They did meet with Fernando Rodney at the winter meetings the other day. I'm told other teams are pushing much harder. So I don't know, Judd. I mean, they're talking to teams. They absolutely have talked trade with the Rays. I'm actually told they haven't had any trade dialogue yet at the winter meetings with the Mets. I thought they would. They did at the GM meetings, but they've not followed up with the Mets.
On starting pitching?
At the winter meetings, correct. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're trading for any sort of Mets bat. You know, I mean, Garrett Cole, maybe.
Yeah,
I still think the Rays, if I had to circle one team, I mean, Danny Duffy makes some sense from the Royals. We see teams make trades if you're in the same division all the time.
Yeah, the Cubs are apparently making a push for Danny Duffy, too.
Well, and they're also in on Alex Cobb. Yep. Like, I've been asked a lot, are the Twins in on Alex Cobb? Yes, they met with his agent a couple days ago. They have not made him an offer. I'm told as of yesterday, no offer extended to Yu Darvish. I'll continue to say, I've been saying this with you guys now for a couple weeks, keep an eye on the trade market. I think it is more realistic they make a trade for a starting pitcher than go all in on a Yu Darvish or an Alex Cobb or a Lance Lynn, even though they met with Lance Lynn's agent the other day. So they're still having dialogue with these agents, but I think it's more realistic they swing a trade.
So there's a Pirates blog that came out yesterday and had specific names in this Garrett Cole conversation. Nick Gordon, Tyler Jay, and Zach Granite, which is, that seems like a realistic discussion that would be happening between the two teams. I'm okay with trading Nick Gordon for a top in his prime starting pitcher. I'm fine with it because you have Royce Lewis, Jorge Polanco, and who knows if Nick Gordon's going to be a shortstop or even a star player. So your thoughts on that collection of names being thrown in with 2 years of Garrett Cole is what you would be getting.
I mean, logically, the names make sense. I will caution that Twitter account is not verified. We have no idea who runs that Twitter account.
That's the winter meetings in a nutshell, right?
Yes. I mean, there was some random Twitter account that tweeted last night that the Twins made Yu Darvish an offer. So I have three or four people tweeting me, hey, is this true? The Twitter account has 9 followers. I mean, it's just, it's one of those weeks where everything is out of control. But logically, if you're the Pirates, those names make sense. So you could, if you wanted to, if you wanted to go Mitch Lawrence on it or Sam Smith, throw a bunch of stuff up against the wall, hope something sticks.
Peter Vesey,
yes. I mean, that makes logical sense, right? So I have no sense, though, that talks are advanced on Garrett Cole. The Twins did meet with Scott Boras the other day. He represents Cole among many guys, Jake Arrieta, others. You know, so presumably, when you're meeting with Scott Boras for 20 to 30 to 40 minutes, a lot of names come up. Presumably, Cole's name came up, but there's no sense the Twins and Pirates, at this point, are in advanced talks. Now, it can change with one phone call, but as we sit here on Wednesday morning, no sense the Twins and Pirates are close to a deal.
Is Darvish in play here? Or is that more of a smokescreen?
Thad Levine has reached out to him a number of times.
Chris Jimenez was, Mike Berardino had a piece. Chris Jimenez was his personal catcher in Texas, and he's been putting the full court press on.
Sounds like he loves Thad.
They love him.
They're pushing for him, obviously, and they're
not
hiding it.
But I think they're pushing for him to an extent. 4 years? Okay. We'll even give you 4 years.
80?
75, maybe even 80. I don't see the Twins giving out a 6-year deal to Yu Darvish, a guy who had Tommy John a couple years ago. I would be surprised. They love him, though.
And he's going to sit.
They do.
He's gonna
make no mistake. They love Yu Darvish. And if atop their free agent rankings, Yu Darvish is one. It's not Jake Arrieta. It's not Lance Lynn. It's Yu Darvish. I still would be surprised, though, if they go 6 years, 130.
The problem for them is, let's say, I think 4 years, 80 in a perfect world, if it were, like, hey, let's come up with a fair deal here and let's not be greedy. 4 years, 80 for a guy who had a down year last year, got shelled in the World Series, and has come off Tommy John a couple years ago. That's a pretty fair deal. You're not going to get him at the winter meetings for $80 million over 4 years. I'm making that number up, but he's going to wait. If he signs for 4 years, it'll be in January or February.
Mm-hmm.
He'll hold out until the last minute to get a 5 or 6 year contract. That's my gut feeling.
I'm with you. Same with Arrieta. Jake Arrieta is not signing this week unless somebody offers $200 million.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is with these big name guys. You know, I mean, baseball is so different than the other sports, right? I mean, I go all in on NBA free agency and NFL free agency, not as much NHL, but some. Everything happens snap of the fingers in those three sports.
Yeah.
This sport, yes, it's weeks, it's months. I still think the Twins will be active. It's a matter of when, not if, but I can't make any guarantees that they're signing a reliever tomorrow or Friday or early next week. Opening day is a long time from now. I'm just telling fans, the Twins will continue to be active. Pineda is not their only move this offseason.
Wolves scoopage. What do you got for us?
They would love to get DeAndre Jordan. Now, I'm told the Clippers have interest in Gorgui Dieng. Now, Gorgui last year, when he signed the 4-year, $62.8 million deal, it was viewed as pretty much a team-friendly deal. When you looked at, and I'm not comparing Dieng to Rudy Gobert and Steve Adams. Those two players are significantly better than Gorgui. But those guys got $100 million deals. So you figured if you save $40 million, you know, Gorgie's not an embarrassment. Gorgui played, what, 30-plus minutes a game last year. There are things that Gorgie brings to the table. By the way, great teammate. Like, I'll tell you this right now. Jimmy Butler thinks the world of Gorgie Jang. I can't stake that claim with every guy in that locker room. I can tell you Jimmy Butler loves.
How far down that path would you like to go, dude?
Gorgie Jang. But I just don't see a logical match. If you're the Clippers, Gorgie Jang plus the Oklahoma City first-round pick.
I know a guy who I'd make available.
Andrew Wiggins?
He is perpetually available if I'm the GM right
you
now.
You can trade him.
Who wants him?
It's not an untradeable contract. Everybody will say he's overpaid. How did you give him the max? You can trade that contract. You may not get back, in your mind, equal value, but if you wanted to move the contract, you could move Andrew Wiggins.
What's left on DeAndre Jordan? A year and a half?
He's got a player option that he will likely exercise. So he will hit the open market in July. So you're pretty much looking at a rental. Now, you would have, I guess I'd have to look at this, but I'm 95% sure on this, just talking out of turn, that you would have his bird rights.
Could you?
Now, you start looking at the luxury tax when you think about having to give Karl Anthony Towns max money. And don't get me wrong. Although, actually, I thought last night his defense got better as the game went on.
Despite
all things considered, yeah, his defense was okay last night.
There was a Deadspin video that made it to the viral stages of the internet of him basically just jumping out of the way and flailing while Embiid went in for
a
dunk.
There were a couple plays that were really embarrassing.
I know. Jamal Crawford did the same thing. But you're still giving him the max, right?
Yes.
Like, you have to.
So he's a far better player than Wiggins. Let's stop with the false equivalencies here. Well, you're hard on Wiggins and not Cat. They're both bad at defense. Only one of them is an amazing offensive and efficient offensive player, and that's Karl Anthony Towns.
Yes, but only one of those two pouts like you wouldn't believe.
Sure.
And it rubs off on his teammates.
And it rubs off on the fans.
He needs to control the pouting.
Which is why
Karl Anthony Towns is out of control with the pouting.
Which is why Butler had the great comment last night is I don't want to hear Towns talking about how this is his fault because he's feeling sorry for himself. It's not you're not being a captain. You're basically saying, woe is me. I tried and we lost. Don't give me this 1-on-5 crap. I love that comment from Butler.
Correct. Yeah, no, I love Jimmy. So you think about Jimmy's long-term money, you start doing the math. On all that money, it gets dicey. Now, Gorgie's at 16 and a half the next couple years, so you would be clearing that money. I'm just saying, logically, Jang plus the Oklahoma City first-round pick plus Cole Aldrich's expiring contract, you have to pay him $2 million to go away, but you can get out of his contract this summer. The Clippers want more than that for DeAndre Jordan. If I'm the Wolves, I would sign, I'll admit my bias, Sean Kilpatrick. The Nets just let him go. He cleared waivers. The Wolves have not reached out on Kilpatrick. Kilpatrick's camp has reached out to the Wolves. They have that open roster spot. So whether it's signing Kilpatrick, Elijah Millsap, Paul Millsap's brother, is playing well for them in Iowa. He plays for the Iowa Wolves. He could help them right now. He can shoot. I'm telling you, Elijah Millsap could help them right now.
What about
just do something or play Shabazz. Give Shabazz. The work ethic is there. Give Shabazz another chance. Plus, I get it. Jamal will hurt you defensively. And I'll admit my bias there, but Jamal Crawford came here with the idea that he would play more minutes. Play him more minutes. Play Gorgie more minutes. Play Tyus more minutes. And, oh, by the way, Nemanja Bjelica, he'd be back by now if he was playing. He's not rushing back to play 11 minutes a night. He's also in a contract year. So, selfishly, he is going to wait until he is 100%. But I'm just saying, if Bjelica was playing 25 minutes a night, he would have been back a week ago. I'm convinced of that.
I'm spitballing here, okay? On the Clippers, just for fun. The Wolves need someone who can knock down a three-pointer, and I'm fine with just getting rid of Andrew Wiggins' contract. I'm out on Wiggins as a $25, $30 million player. I'm not going to go down the laundry list of things that drive me nuts, but Lou Williams can knock down a three. He's on a one-year deal.
I like Lou.
He's 31. DeAndre Jordan's 29. I get that you'd be punting on a super young player, Andrew Wiggins, but I don't care. Like, you could clear the salary. Wiggins for Lou Williams, like, would there be a pick involved here somewhere? DeAndre Jordan, is there a package there somewhere?
All right.
So let's play this out. Out of my mind.
Let's play this out.
I'm just going through the Clippers roster.
Giving up Wiggins. You would need from Jeff Schwartz, who I think you have an okay relationship with. That's DeAndre Jordan's new agent. You would need some sort of assurance, right?
Well, he's 29.
That DeAndre would stay.
He's 29, and he's going to be here until he's 30, and Tom Thibodeau will have him basically in a coffin by 31.
Well, that's where it gets dicey. Okay, so you have Jordan, okay? Are you willing to pay DeAndre Jordan max money, which, by the way, when he's 34 years old, would be, you ready for this? $48 million. Do the math on it. I've done it. Actually, one of the guys from Canis Hoopus gave it to me. It is $48 million. So yeah, that's the only way you're keeping DeAndre Jordan is to give him the max.
But on the Wiggins front...
Do you
front,
really want to give Jordan the max?
I don't know.
I can't do that.
I can't do that either. But here's the thing about Wiggins. Wiggins' value will only continue to go down the more teams see how inefficient and selfish he is on the court. This is the peak of his value, folks. It ain't going to get a whole lot better from here with the money he makes. He's 4 years in, and he still takes 20-foot shots like he's Steph Curry. And he can't make them. Someone just posted, he's shooting 27%. I saw this on Twitter this morning on jump shots this year.
Well, here.
Stop taking jump shots.
I'll give you a nugget on this. You ready for this? And I'll admit my bias on this one. Drew Hanlon is about the best NBA trainer on the planet. He helped develop Joel Embiid. You see Jason Tatum. Drew's from St. Louis.
Yeah.
Him and Jason Tatum go back 7 or 8 years. Jason Tatum is an unbelievable rookie for the Celtics. Nobody thought he could make three-pointers. Jason Tatum is making three-pointers. Drew Hanlon has his fingerprints on that. Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal is a St. Louis kid. Him and Hanlon go back 10, 11, 12 years. Bradley Beal, one of the best shooters in the NBA. Drew Hanlon knows what to do. The Wolves have told Wiggins, in season, we have our own shooting coach. We have our own methods. We don't want you working with Drew Hanlon in season.
But he works, summer, with them, he works with them in the summer.
Off-season, fine. But I'm just saying,
yeah.
Like, Wiggins can't make free throws right now. Go get Drew Hanlon. If I'm the Wolves, I'm flying Drew Hanlon into town.
Dude, this is messed up.
But the Wolves have their own shooting coach.
This is what we call dysfunction.
They feel like they trust him.
Yeah, it's working really well.
Yeah.
But it's not working exactly. So if it's broken, how can you fix it? Wiggins has a great relationship with Drew Hanlon. That's his guy. Tell Wiggins, hey, you can work with Drew in season. We think Drew can help fix your shot. Yeah, I mean, the numbers are disgusting. So I'm just saying there are methods in my mind to fix some of those warts, but the Wolves have to be open-minded.
Yeah. Thank you, Doogie. Good stuff, man.
You got it, boys. Mark Coyle on the Scoop podcast. My first time sitting down with him in 11 months. We're actually going to do it more often now. But Gophers AD Mark Coyle on FLEC, men's basketball, the men's hockey attendance issues, his 18 months on the job. It's worth a listen. Scoop podcast episode 115 available right now.
Really looking forward to hearing how he's doing athletically, academically, socially, and spiritually.
He's not a spiritually guy. Even though he's religious, he actually skips on the spiritually part. Thanks, boys.
Bye, Doogie. All right, Dave, what's coming up next in stuff?
Major collisions between the worlds of politics and sports. There's a new tune we have to listen to and an update on possibly the luckiest guy in the world.
The Mackey and Judd Show rolls on.
Finally.
On 1500 ESPN.
And stuff you should know about is sponsored by Panera Bread. Get a Panera Bread gift card this holiday season. For every $50 in gift cards purchased, you'll get a $10 bonus card. For more details, visit your local bakery cafe. Phil?
Oh, I'm sorry. Phil. Second time in 6 months.
Pizza
dang. I was just—I was so in love with that expired pizza.
You should simply be aware of.
Can't believe stuff you did going that. On that no one talked about.
Pretty heavy stuff.
Let me show you some stuff.
So good.
I don't do that stuff no more.
This stuff can give you brain damage.
And then there's the stuff you should know about.
Lots of great stuff.
This is the fun stuff.
I love this stuff.
Good stuff.
Man, this stuff's good.
This is that kind of stuff.
I want to check that stuff out.
Mackey and Judd now continues.
This is very serious stuff we're talking about here.
With stuff you should know about.
And now we can do the stuff you should know about, Dave Harrigan.
Yes, let's get to it right away. The stuff you should know about. Everybody knows about the big news in politics yesterday. The special election in Alabama. Doug Jones, the Democrat winning an Alabama seat in the United States Senate. He defeats Roy Moore. Boy, there was a lot of decisions, especially for lifelong Republicans as they went into the voting booth, knowing the baggage that their guy brought in with them.
You had an interesting experience this morning at the polls, a crisis of your own. Tell us about that.
Yes, ma'am. I'm a lifelong Republican, and this is the first time in my entire life that I haven't voted for the Republican candidate. I wrote in Nick Saban instead.
True Alabama football fan, that was your choice, huh?
Yes, ma'am. And the reason why is at first I was going to vote for the other guy, but then I had a crisis in the voting booth and started thinking about what Richard Shelby had said and Condoleezza Rice. And so I just wrote in Nick Saban.
All right, then.
Imagine,
I think a lot of people did.
Imagine stepping into the booth, closing the little curtain behind you, and just freaking out. Saban!
Right, but
Saban!
The best part is it doesn't cause you to vote for the other candidate. It causes you to then vote for the Alabama football coach.
I think every question I've had about why our country is so bleeped up the past couple of years has been answered in the last 24 hours. All of it. Including the clip that you just played.
I'd vote Zim. But that's me personally.
Well, I know you're a big, big Zim guy. I can tell that. Let's do this. Norv Turner, what do you think he's up to these days?
I saw this, so I have to recuse myself.
Phil?
I have not seen this.
Of all the hobbies he could have picked up since leaving NFL coaching duties.
I mean, fly fisherman would seem to fit, but if it was just fly fishing, then you wouldn't be bringing it up and stuff. So
that's probably... You're getting along the right track. That seems...
being the key.
Yeah, seems a little country western.
Hmm.
He's not singing, but he's writing.
Oh my God,
Stephen Ray is a country artist. His actual name is Stephen Ray Mariucci, son of Steve Mariucci. He and Norv are buddies, and Norv got out the little pen and paper, and he decided to pen a little country tune along with Stephen Ray. Things I've Never Done. Would you like to hear it?
Of course. Called a three-step drop back?
Of course we want to hear it.
Life looking back in hindsight. Tell me where'd you go? And what if you had 20/20 vision looking back, growing old?
Well, that's a shot at Zim right there. A whole verse.
That's the eyesight shot.
Don't want to be saying anytime down the road, you wish you did this, wish you did that. I can hear you saying what you do right now. You'd go to the Indy 500 to hear those engines roar.
You know, it's not a terrible song. But
I agree, it's not at all.
I think the vision shots are a little bit over the top.
The whole first part is all Vikings.
Hindsight.
Yeah, hindsight.
2020. Take that Zim.
Place for Teddy.
Update on the luckiest guy in the world. Maybe he is, maybe he's not. But hey, he got his celebrity dream girl to go on a date with him. And then again. And now a third time. TMZ has spotted John Gorky and Jeannie Bouchard hanging out on the beach in Miami yesterday, trunks and bikini in play.
Wow. So they're together.
Yes.
Certainly seems that way.
Yeah,
the guy closed the deal via Twitter with his celebrity dream girl.
That's pretty amazing.
God
well done.
Him. More exactly. More
incredible.
Power to him. More power. Good for that guy.
You know,
I admire him.
This is like when Chris Moneymaker won the World Series of Poker, just some random dude from Tennessee who bought into a satellite for $30 and then became a multimillionaire, right? This gives permission to every guy in the internet to keep sliding in those DMs. keep shooting for the stars.
Good luck to most of them.
Keep taking those shots.
Let's go back to politics. Yesterday, Dwayne The Rock Johnson on the Ellen show.
Would you run? I mean, would you run?
I'm seriously considering it, yes.
Well, you did.
That being run for president.
Dude, I'm all in on this, 100%. Why, Judd, come on.
This whole thing.
Who would be better? Well, Stone Cold, but he's not going to run. Stone Cold would be a better president.
You got guys in the... Why can't we just go back to the way it used to be?
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
Why does it have to be this way?
Only if he speaks in the third person the entire time he's doing his speeches.
It's going to be Dwayne The Rock Johnson, George Clooney.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
Mark Cuban. Don't forget about Mark Cuban.
Yeah, Mark Cuban. Honest to God.
Just imagine, he takes over the Oval Office. First State of the Union address. You got Speaker up there. He's introducing everybody as they come into the chamber. You know, it's Senator this, Judge that, Vice President. And now...
It's just a man!
And you know what now?
Finally,
The
Rock has come back to D.C.
With the way things are now, wouldn't surprise me one bit. If that happened, you wouldn't be like, oh my God, what's going on? You'd be like, oh yeah, it's the president.
You know what? I'd vote for him. What the hell? Jesse Ventura as a governor, Donald Trump as a president. We've gone too far. We've gone too far.
I think.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
Well, we know The Rock would be outstanding with international relations. happens to be Wednesday, Wrestling Promo of the Weekday, when we do it. And I say we know that because he's proven it many, many times over a long wrestling career. For instance, when he took a trip to Monday Night Raw with our good friends to the north.
Vince McMahon did The Rock a favor. He said, Rock, you can go wherever you want to go. You can do whatever you want to do. So The Rock said he wanted to go live Monday night on Raw. More importantly than that, The Rock said he wanted to come right here to Toronto, Canada.
The Rock sucking up in this crowd, if you ask me.
And then The Rock said, wait a minute, are you kidding The Rock? Are you kidding The Rock? What, is this the first time you've ever heard someone mention your city? Is that it? Oh, yay, hooray, he said Toronto, yay, woo, yay. That's where we live. We live in Toronto. Yay! Shut up!
Oh. Sometimes there's not a lot to cheer about living here in Toronto. All right. Thank you.
Pretty good.
Dude, I'm telling you, the promos he would cut.
Oh, I know.
The campaign trail.
Yep.
Come on.
Everyone would watch.
Would he have to step off Air Force One every single trip he takes
and smell the air?
Start with, finally.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
And then, of course, like as part of his cabinet when he eventually gets elected, all of the top wrestlers from the last 30 years. Ric Flair can be the national security advisor.
Mm-hmm. Why
Come
not?
On, Judd.
Why not?
Let's do this.
Might as well.
First bill he vetoes, he throws it down on the floor and gives it the people's elbow.
First time he steps onto the floor. And maybe ask some of the other senators and congressmen their opinions. So, Senator McCain, what do you think about this new bill? Well, it doesn't matter what you think.
No? I'm telling okay. you. No, it'd be the norm.
Oh, man.
No, we'd have no problem with it. It wouldn't be surprising.
Let's unveil track 2 off Songs by the U-Log, Volume 3, when we come back here, gentlemen. And also, Alan Horton's going to be in studio. Timberwolves radio play-by-play man. When we come back, all kinds of stuff.
Phil Mackey.
He's got the body language of a whiner.
Judd Zolgad.
Every time he opens his mouth, it's a garbage dumpster of crap coming out of it.
Mackey and Judd on 1500 ESPN.
Jolly young Miguel Sano, please put down the plate. 16 hot dogs is enough for you in one day. Spring training is coming soon. Now, my dear young man, your diet should be more than just Pringles from a can. We expected you would lead our ball club in home runs, but we found you in the mall at the Cinnabon. Right field wasn't good for you, that was plain to see. But it doesn't help us when your weight begins with 3.
Here's Jeanette, another well-hit ball in the right, but Sano misplays it, and it's going to go all the way to the wall. Jeanette on in the second. And perhaps an example of the work in progress defensively with Miguel Sano.
Maybe try a vegetable, a carrot stick or two. Protein is a healthy choice, or a piece of fruit. Plouffe is gone, so you will find your home at third base. Fielding ground balls cleaner with a smaller waist.
Ah, yes, a classic off
Still holds
volume
up.
2.
Very much holds up to this day.
It does. That is true.
Might want to take that song if you're Sano. Give it a good listen and adjust mm-hmm. your lifestyle accordingly.
So that was a little negative coming off a 103 loss season.
Uh-huh.
The tone has changed in Volume 3 with the Minnesota Twins, who went to the playoffs and became one of the best turnaround stories in the history of Major League Baseball.
Manager of the year.
Manager of the year. Bunch of breakout seasons from young players.
Couple mm-hmm. gold gloves.
Yeah, it's true. And off of what Dave just said, one of the main reasons for why the Twins went to the playoffs last year is our featured song number 2, track 2 off Volume 3, Songs by the U-Log.
Boys, you know what I love most about baseball?
Oh, is it the bombs, Dave?
Is it the double switch?
No, it's outfield defense.
Oh.
Dashing pole to pole, making all the plays,
covering so much ground
every night and day,
crashing into walls Watch them as they fly.
Giant gaps at Target Field,
where doubles go to die. Oh, Byron catches everything. Max makes every play. If you test Eddie's arm, he'll gun you at the play. Hey, Byron catches everything. Max makes every play. If you test Eddie's arm, he'll gun you at the play.
Just 1 year ago,
it was an ugly sight. The starting outfield,
Abigail Sano and Wright.
Ho, 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 pitchers say their thanks for the luck that they have got.
What used to be an extra base
now is getting cut. Oh, Byron catches everything. Max makes every play. If you test Eddie's arm, he'll gun you at the play.
Hey,
Byron catches everything. Max makes every play. If you test Eddie's arm, he'll gun you at the plate.